This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And a lot of stuff is going on in technology this week. Nest, is, of course, has their CO2 detectors back on the shelves, so after they'd recalled them, and they're actually collecting a lot of data. Mm-hmm. You know, Nest now is owned by Google, so I'm going to talk a little bit about all the data that they're collecting on you when you put their devices in your house. Google is giving scholarships to get more girls into computer science, and Google's Loony net balloons are getting better.
Yes, they are.
They're getting much better.
Although they've all been soccer recently, and soccer just, it just turns me off. I'm sorry.
No. Loony net balloons. These are these balloons that go around the world
to give
internet access to remote areas. That's really, really big.
Well, that's different.
Really big progress there. And there's also a great microfinance project to help build, help those in poverty in Bangladesh, you know, get out of poverty and learn to be coders so they can earn more money. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Tremendously large.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Two.
It bounced. Are there rubber letters in there?
It's so heavy. I know. It's just, there could be rubber letters in here. Maybe they.
Okay.
Okay, we got an email from Glenn. Dear Doc and Jim, I've purchased an e-book and have received a return web page that I'm supposed to do something with. It tells me the ebook is PDF. I can't figure out what to do with this. I don't understand the instructions. How am I supposed to get my book? Thanks, Glenn. Well, Glenn, let's do some basics. Okay, ebooks is short for electronic books, of course. Everybody should know that. And they're typically downloaded and read on your computer. Now, there are many formats for ebooks. Each format requires a specific reader. Like the open standard, the one that I prefer is EPUB. That's an open standard. Most of the ebook readers will read EPUB. The Apple specific ebook standard is iBook. They have their own standard. Kindle is the standard that's used for Amazon ebooks. Microsoft has their own standard, Microsoft LIT, Microsoft Lit. That's their own standard. Now, the book that they gave you was uses the PDF standards. This is portable document file. That's what that PDF stands for, and it's used for document storage and compression. So PDF has been a standard format for years. It's not as convenient as the ebook formats, because ebooks you can easily highlight them. There are a lot of additional features that you have with ebooks. But PDF is okay. But of course you'll need a PDF reader. Now, if you've got a Windows 8 machine, there's a PDF reader included in Windows 8. It's called the Reader app. If you're on a Mac, you've got the Preview app, which is a reader. Now, what I like to use is the Adobe Reader, which is the official PDF reading program, and it's available free on most platforms. You just download it from Adobe. So I just download Adobe Reader, and bingo, it opens up PDF files. So all you have to do is right-click. You go to that website that they've given you, right click on the link, and you'll have a choice to download the file to your computer. You create a subdirectory, so I'd recommend that you create a subdirectory. Say, well, maybe you could call it books, something so you can easily find it, and then you just save it into your books subdirectory. And then after you've downloaded the file, just go to the books subdirectory and find the file you want to read and click on it, and your PDF, your Adobe Reader will just open up, and you can read your ebook. Now, what I do, I'll read PDF books. I have some PDF books that I get. I read them on the reader on the iBook reader on my iPad, because the iPad either has a sort of a PDF, sort of an ebook format, the iBook format, but they also can read PDF files. And so I just store it in the PDF section of my iBook reader, and I read the PDF files actually on my iPad. But that was a great question.
Yeah.
We got an email from Paula in Kansas. Dear Tech Talk, I've decided to look for another job. Uh-oh. And I'm sending emails to potential employers. How private are my emails? Can my current employer see them? That would be a problem.
Yes.
Love the show, Paula in Kansas. Well, Paula, if you use your company email account, the administrators of that email account have access to all your emails, and they can view them, they can forward them, they can do anything they want with them. Now, chances are they don't really care about your emails,
right.
But suppose that some people, that your boss said, you know, I think Paula's up to something fishy here. He could tell the IT guys to open up your email account and let him look at it. So I'm thinking that it's not a good idea to use your company account when you want to be looking for a job. I would use either Gmail or Yahoo, because those are web-based email systems. The emails are stored on the web-based servers. Your boss cannot get into that because they don't know your password. So that server would be secure. Now, so your email itself, when it's being stored there, secure. On the other hand, if you're using a computer at work, it is possible that your company could put some sort of software on your computer that would monitor your keystrokes, monitor what you're doing. They could actually see everything that you're doing through some sort of monitoring process. And actually, everything you're doing is actually passing over their network. They could actually put together sniffers. They could pull out your packets, and they could really investigate this. That is just not probably going to happen.
Yeah.
But if you're really paranoid about it, and if you want to send an email while at work, I'd use your cell phone. Don't use any company resources, or else just wait till you get home. My feeling is that just use Gmail and you're probably
sure.
going to be okay.
Right.
But if you got nuclear secrets or something, that may not be good enough.
No.
We got an email from Jim in Bowie. Dear Tech Talk, I have so many passwords that I'm having trouble keeping them all straight. Each year, I make my passwords longer and longer and longer so they're more secure. Now the recommendation is that they be at least 10 digits long. This is getting just too much to remember.
It is.
Is there a simple way to secure and store them? Love the show, Jim and Bowie. Well, Jim, as computer speeds increases, hackers are able to crack hashed password lists faster and faster. You see, it used to be that 8 digits would give you a reasonable amount of protection. So they tried to crack a hashed list of passwords. It would take them, a year or something at the slow computers. Because now the speeds have gotten so fast, they might be able to break 8 digits in just a day.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have to go to 10 digits, and then it might take a year to crack that. And so if they're just using brute force methods. And so that's why they're recommending that you go to 10 digits instead of 8. Now where do these hashed password lists come from? If hackers, say, hack into eBay or hack into Yahoo and they steal the login files, which include username and the associated hashed password, which is actually an encrypted password, so they've got to de-encrypt it to find out what it is, they download that, and then they've got this list of hashed passwords, and they just brute force. They go through every possible combination, and then they look, and then they check what is the hash output for every single password that they could come up with through brute force. And when they get a match, they say, okay, that's the password. So they can do that. It's brute force, and they just let the computer run. So that's how they do that. So I'm glad that you're responding to that threat, Jim, by going to 10 digits. But
mm-hmm.
now you got the problem remembering these all, because you want a different one for every account. It gets to be a big deal. So there are two password managers that I like. The first one is KeePass, and the second one is RoboForm.
Okay.
Now, KeePass is an open source free password program that's available for everything from portable Windows installation to implementation on iPhone, Pocket PCs, and Android phones. KeePass supports a variety of features, including automatic password generation, field and icon customization, secure notes, login and password, entry through clipboard copying, drop and drag, or autofill. KeePass supports a wide range of import and export formats, as well as printing for hard copy, backup, or secure offline storage. So I like KeePass because it's open source, and it's free.
Is that what you use?
Yeah.
Okay.
KeePass, I like that. But a lot of people like RoboForm.
Uh-huh.
Now, the basic form of RoboForm is free. You can get the professional version for $29, but I think the free version is fine, too. I've played around with RoboForm. I don't use it on a regular basis. Now, it's gotten praise because it's tightly integrated with popular web browsers. So when you're filling out a form, the password automatically goes into the web browser from RoboForm. It's the integration is just a little bit better than KeePass, so you don't have to do, you know, the password just shows up. You put in your username and the password shows up and it pulls it out of the database.
No kidding.
Not out of the browser cache. So it's secure. And RoboForm includes encrypted notes, random password generation, the ability to print hard copy backs of your passwords. It's not quite as slick as KeePass, but the integration with web browsers is very convenient.
So this is something that I'm wondering about because I have all these work things, and everybody is asking me to change my password every 3 months, and I use things that I can remember. So now I've actually stored it on my iPad.
I would use one of these. It's encrypted, and then you only have to remember one password.
Okay, so KeePass.
KeePass.
So you have to have that running on your computer or on your iPad in order for it. So will it? You go into say Google.
Yeah, you
right?
could. They KeePass has a version that you can download to an iPhone or to an iPad. So you just download. It's an app.
Download it. I go into my Google account. All right. And it will automatically retrieve, or do I have to look at KeePass?
No, you're going to have to enter in the password initially. You'll have to enter in all the passwords for all your accounts initially. And then what KeePass does, you can cut and paste your password into the things. If you use RoboForm, it automatically just puts in the password.
So basically, KeePass is doing the same thing I'm doing on the notepad on my it basically just stores it. You go into KeePass,
it stores it in an encrypted way.
Okay. All
right. And so that – actually, I'm thinking you've probably graduated to KeePass. And they've got a version for an iPad and an iPhone.
Now, if I'm using my work computer, would I have to? What would I do? Would I have to download KeePass onto the work computer and then?
Yeah, you would download it there. Now there are also web-based versions of password storage, but then all your passwords are stored on the web, and then you pull it out of the web, and then it's accessible from anywhere.
Now, do you use LifeLock? Did you tell me that a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I use LifeLock.
How does that? Is that sort of the same thing or
no? LifeLock, what it does, it knows all it checks all my bank accounts to see whether any there's been any changes to my bank account. It checks all my credit cards. It checks whether somebody's trying to open a credit card in my name. And so it also removes information about me from databases that make it more difficult to create credit cards.
No kidding.
And then it checks my credit reports, and every 3 months it says, "Okay, we've checked everything. You're not showing up anywhere." It's actually, because since I travel so much internationally, I'm thinking I'd be very, very easy for somebody to pick up my stuff. So I get it. It's like $59 a year or something.
So will it notify you like anytime there's a direct deposit or anytime there's
weird? No, anytime there's a change to my account. No, so like if somebody would try to open up a credit card in my name, I would be notified.
Or if somebody tried to get into, maybe somebody tried to get into your online banking.
It's not going to check that.
It wouldn't check that. No,
it's only going to check if somebody tries to set up an account. Which is what you do in identity theft. You try to set up a credit card in my name by stealing my identity and then charging to it.
So that's what
it's identity theft.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Got it. All right.
We got an email from Jim in the studio. I have an AT&T phone, and I'd like to unlock it. What are my options here?
So we were
just talking about this not too long ago, actually. And it turns out that AT&T has, in fact, changed their policy, and they now will unlock a phone which has been fully paid for. It turns out that Verizon will. I get Verizon when it's unlocked immediately, whether it's paid for or not.
Okay.
I mean, but AT&T still somehow doesn't trust their customers. But it used to be they wouldn't unlock it at all. And so you can simply, if you want to unlock your phone, you simply go to AT&T.com/device unlock.
Mm-hmm.
And it will, and these are the conditions to get it unlocked. You have to be a current or former AT&T customer. Your AT&T mobile device must be designed for use on the AT&T network. It must be paid for in full, which means that the 2-year contract has to have been run out.
The first 2 year, renewals.
The first 2 years, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the device, it has to be 2 years since you bought it,
right,
or since you got the phone, because then it takes 2 years to pay for it. And the device cannot be reported as being stolen.
Well, there's that. That's
so,
a good thing.
So, Jim, tell me, is your device fully paid for?
It is, yes.
So you can actually unlock this
mm-hmm.
without any issue then.
Well, this the issue is my daughter's going to London at the beginning of July,
yeah.
The beginning of this month. In fact, she's just left now. And so we were, you know, going on what you've done overseas uh-huh. in the past. I want to get her a SIM card over there so I don't
yeah.
have to get a third job to pay for her cell phone bill for the next month.
So they can unlock it.
Mm-hmm.
It's an iPhone. What is it?
It's a 4.
Four, yeah, they can unlock it because they don't need the phone to unlock it. They because
mm-hmm.
they log on to the Apple servers, which you use when you first activate the phone, and they authorize unlock. And then what happens is that when you put in a new SIM card, it reactivates. It goes to the Apple server and it says, yeah, that you're allowed to put in a different SIM card, and it activates it.
Now, she's going to London. Will she have to buy the SIM card there? Or can we buy one here?
So it's easier to buy it there.
Is it cheaper to buy it there?
Yeah, I think it's cheaper.
Okay,
I think it's cheaper to buy it there.
It's
heavy competition. What's happening there? There are resellers selling the same network. So you got resellers competing with the main sellers, and they have all kinds of plans. So you have to decide, do I want to have cheaper overseas calls, or I want cheaper local calls? Some of the cards only work for the London, and they don't roam around UK. So you might want, if you get an all UK card, that's a different price than just a London card.
Well, that's a good point, because she's going to do some traveling while she's over there.
So,
she's going to go.
And so what you've got to do is you've got to go to one of the places where you buy SIM card and talk to a salesman and say, okay, this is what I need. What's the best deal for me? She'd probably like to get data with it.
Oh, she's definitely going to need data.
So then they have all kinds of different data plans. So I can't give you just a simple answer, but you really want to get it over there.
Okay.
And what I'd recommend, she's probably got friends over there. They're going to know which one is what's the best price.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she should then go to the AT&T website and get this thing unlocked. It is relatively easy to do, and you're allowed up to 5 unlocks per account per year. I don't know why you'd have so many unlocks though.
So when I don't because once it's unlocked, right?
Yeah. Once it's unlocked, it's unlocked.
So she goes over there, she gets a new SIM card, she slides it into the phone, powers the phone back up, and it just comes back.
Yeah.
It doesn't change your phone number, right?
No. The SIM card has a different phone number.
Oh, okay. So she'll have a different phone number.
She'll
and then when she
phone...
comes back to the United States, she just puts the old SIM card back in the thing, and the old one comes back.
And her number's replaced, yeah.
So how much roughly do you think this is going to cost her? She's a relatively heavy user. What should she be, you know, how much?
I'm thinking when I go to, I went, yeah, I'd probably 30 euros. It's not going to be that much.
$30, okay.
$40.
Okay.
Depending on how much data. But her phone also has Wi-Fi. So if she uses Wi-Fi connection, she won't use that much data.
Right.
So, yeah. So what I, you know, and you just recharge it. You like the SIM card. Some plans the SIM card's free, and you just add. You just charge it up with say 20 euro or 10 euro,
mm-hmm.
and then when you run out, you just you go
back to
you
the
just,
store.
You just recharge it. You can go to any store and you put in a code, and you can recharge it.
Okay.
So she just get enough to get going. See if she likes the connection, and she can always recharge it when she runs out.
Oh, that's a good point.
And so I mean, the SIM card might be 10 euro. Some of them are free depending on the plan.
Uh huh. Good. Okay. Well, I'm sure that because this is going with a group that does this all the time. I'm sure they will give her some guidance as to how to do that. I'm sorry. You're going to say?
Yeah, I'm going to say, we love all the emails.
We do.
Just email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll handle your email on the air, or else we'll email you back directly.
This is Tech Talk on Saturday morning on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and online at techtalkonline.com. We'll be back with more right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes. Today we're going to be talking about Mihalis, Mike, Lazaridis.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Lazaridis?
I think you're right on there.
Mihalis is his first name, mm-hmm. but people,
call me Mike.
He just says, just call me Mike. So we'll mm-hmm. call him Mike Lazaridis. He is the founder and co-CEO of Research in Motion.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard of that? RIM.
I've never heard of that.
Research in Motion is the company that created and which manufactures the BlackBerry wireless handheld devices.
Oh, so now we know why we're talking about them.
Yeah, yeah. Research in Motion. Now, of course, I do have a BlackBerry.
I do not.
It's very convenient. But I don't have a cell phone. But I don't have an iPhone. I mean,
no,
I don't have an iPhone.
You have the ersatz iPhone, the one that you created.
Yeah, I have the. So Mike Lazaridis was born March 14th, 1964, in Istanbul, Turkey, to ethnic Greek parents.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a Greek name. He was born in Istanbul. Lazaridis was 5 years old when his family moved to Canada. That was in 1966, settling in Windsor, Ontario. This was they moved after there was a big protest in Turkey against the Greeks. There was a lot of violence against
yeah.
Greeks in Turkey. Something happened, and his family moved shortly thereafter.
Time to go.
Now, at age 12, he won a prize at the Windsor Public Library for reading every science book in the library.
Wow.
That's an impressive feat at
age
12.
Something you might do.
Yeah, and so his mom said, boy, I'll tell you, Mike is on his way. He is going to be good big time. His parents are really proud of him. So then he enrolled at the University of Waterloo, which is kind of the MIT of Canada,
mm-hmm.
in electrical engineering, and his mom was really happy. He interned at Ontario's Control Data Corporation while he was in school. Now, he started school in 1979. Then in 1984, when he was a few credits shy of his degree, Mike dropped out of school.
This happens so often on Profiles in IT, doesn't it?
He dropped out of school, and his mom said, oh, Mike.
Back to the basement.
Mike, how are you ever going to make it in life dropping out of school like
yeah.
this? Just a few more credits.
Oh, well.
He said, Mom, have faith. It's all going to work out. In 1984, the year that he dropped out, he founded a little company called Research in Motion, and along with his childhood friend, Doug Friegan.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
Since then, now Research in Motion ultimately made what was called the BlackBerry device, and it has become a very popular platform for companies which want to provide email to their mobile workforce, secure email. So that was right. really the forte of what they actually developed. Now, the actual device, BlackBerry device, can be traced back to the early 1990s when RIM began working on the BlackBerry predecessor, which operated on MobiText. I've never heard of MobiText.
Neither have I.
Now, that was a narrowband wireless data network developed by Ericsson and operated by Bell South in the United States. Now, it was very narrowband. It didn't really have much network capacity. So he worked, Lazaridis worked very hard. He was really an engineer, even though he didn't graduate. He worked very hard to optimize the network performance of the early BlackBerry, the early device, which at that time, which from our current standards, was extremely large and cumbersome. It wasn't until 1997 that all of his efforts paid off in the form of a smaller, more efficient device. So he started the company in 84, and he did research to come up with an efficient device until 97. That's 13 years. Nobody ever heard of Research in Motion. His mom was saying, you know, Mike, you should have finished that darn degree. You're going nowhere.
Yeah.
After he came up with a smaller, more efficient device, he introduced the first BlackBerry in 1999, and it was just a two-way pager. He wanted to name the device, and it had all these little buttons on it. You know, BlackBerry's got all these this array of black buttons, and so he hired the company that the branding company that that was used by Apple for branding called Lexicon Branding. They're the people that that named all of the products for Apple and a number of other of the technology companies in California. So Lexicon Branding, they looked at the device and they said, you know, all these little keys look like seeds, like fruit. Uh-huh. So they started saying, they initially thought about strawberry. Because, you know, it's like it's kind of a strawberry looking. And somebody said, no, maybe blueberry. They said, hey, how about BlackBerry? Because you look at a BlackBerry, the little nodules sort of look like the keys on the BlackBerry device. Mm-hmm. So they decided, okay, BlackBerry is it. But it was just basically a paging device. It wasn't until 2002... That the more commonly known smartphone BlackBerry was released. Now this was the first phone that converged all the technology. You know, instead of just being a pager, it was a phone. Right. It did email. It surfed the web with internet. It did a lot of different things, and so it was a convergence of technology. The first smartphone that they released, and it was a huge hit. Now Lazaridis believes that the BlackBerry's popularity is based on the fact that it's simple, and he focuses just on delivering secure email to business users. As he likes to say, he doesn't iPhone the user with so many features that you don't know what you're going to do with them. And so he really focused on the corporate market, and it seemed to be very successful. He's got something like 3.65 million BlackBerry users today.
Mm-hmm.
But now they are fighting for market share with iPhone because iPhone is now going after the corporate market, and many people would like to be iPhoned, actually.
Yeah.
It's become quite popular.
Yeah. Now, I've been sitting over here trying to find pictures of the first BlackBerry device, and I'm not sure if I have. Does it look like something like that? Was that the first one?
No, that's not the first one. That's a smartphone. The first one wasn't even a phone. It was a pager.
Yeah.
And it just had buttons for writing down whatever you're going to page. It's like a big paging device. Now, along the way, Lazaridis accumulated more than 30 patents. See, he was actually a technical guy.
Mm-hmm.
He worked for 13 or 14 years in the lab actually working on stuff. He got 30 or 40 patents. For wireless functions for the BlackBerry. He also got inventions such as a wireless PC card, industrial display systems, a barcode reader that's used to produce motion pictures. In fact, he got an Emmy Award in 1999 for his barcode reader for the movies.
Cool.
So, you know, so he's quite an ingenious guy. He's basically a technologist.
That barcode reader is in wide use.
Yeah.
I mean, they use it at ballparks and big venues and stuff like that.
Now this is the deal. Now, in 2000, Mom could be very proud of him.
Yes, of course.
The University of Waterloo awarded him an honorary Doctor of Engineering degree in the year 2000 for all of his technical developments.
I think he earned it. What do you think?
You think so? I think
I think that's it.
That's the pager.
It doesn't say BlackBerry on it. It says RIM up at the top.
So that's right. No, the original one was not called BlackBerry.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's it. That's the original pager.
Uh-huh.
And those keys are like the little seeds.
It does look like some sort of a berry. They come in. They kind of make a little chevron.
That's right.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So he got.
It up to the camera.
Hold it up to the webcam. And, yeah, all of you that have subscribed to the premium Tech Talk service can look at the image over the air. It's a very select few.
That's right. It's you and me and
that's
Andrew.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Andrew, come look at it.
Now. Yeah. So Mom was very happy. She went to the graduation there in 2000 and got his Doctor of Engineering. Now, in the year June 2003, listen to this, he became the 8th chancellor of the University of Waterloo.
Mm-hmm.
So can you imagine he dropped out as an undergraduate? They gave him an honorary PhD, and then they brought him back as chancellor in 2003.
That's funny.
Now, let's look at why that could possibly have happened. Now, he believed that investments in basic research at the university level help fuel the economy of the next generation. And he wanted to give back to the research community because he realized that much of his success was built on the scientific discoveries that occurred 50 or 100 years ago. So in the past 10 years, he's donated over $250 million to the University of Waterloo.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that could have anything to do with the fact that him being chancellor?
Might have something to do with it.
Now, he supported the Institute for Theoretical Physics.
He could have bought it if he wanted to.
Yeah, but see, the guy basically is supporting physics. I really like this guy.
I see.
He supported the Perimeter Institute for Theoretical Physics there at Waterloo. He supported the Institute for Quantum Computing and the Institute for Nanotechnology. So he's basically spending money to develop a research base there at University of Waterloo to help generate businesses in the area,
mm-hmm.
much like we have up in the Boston area around MIT in mm-hmm. that area, or out in California in around Berkeley and in that area. So he wanted to create an innovation hub, and actually he's using his money to invest in that. It was interesting. He and Bill Gates, this is not on the notes, but I was reading, he and Bill Gates both appeared at a conference that was hosted by University of Waterloo. And the Waterloo folks were afraid that Gates and Lazaridis would not get along very well because they were highly competitive in the mobile phone area. You know, BlackBerry and Microsoft were you know, really duking it out for market share in the mobile phone area. And they got together, and they hit it off because what they did, they talked about their charitable work
mm-hmm.
and how they wanted to take the money they'd earned in technology and what their vision was for transforming that. And, of course, Bill Gates has focused his money on education and healthcare. And Lazaridis is focused on the development of technology and research. And so they just got along like two peers talking about how they were going to give away their money. So it was actually quite the guy that organized the conference was relieved that they got along so well.
Because you never know, right?
You never know. Now, he became, in 2006, he became Officer of the Order of Canada. And a member of the Order of Ontario.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but okay. I think it's a big deal.
I think it's something that I need to ask Mr. Google about.
I think it's a big deal. And his mother was even prouder yet.
But if she's not, she's got a problem.
Now here's the final capstone in my presentation mm-hmm. on Mike. He has, according to Forbes, in 2010, his net worth was $1.7 billion. That's about half as much as the guy that started Baidu there in China, but still, $1.7 billion is quite nice.
Okay, this is the Order of Canada is an honor for merit that is the highest order administered by the Governor General and Council of the Canadian System of Honours.
There you go.
On behalf of the Queen of Canada.
Canada has a queen?
No, Canada.
No, that's got to be Queen Elizabeth.
Created in 1967.
I think Elizabeth.
It's got to be.
It's got to be Queen of the Commonwealth.
It's the Canadian monarch. President is Elizabeth II.
Yeah, that's got to be. Mm-hmm. They don't have their own queen.
It's Wikipedia, man. Give me a break, all right? You know?
I should talk about editing Wikipedia because it's really cool. I've gotten into editing Wikipedia.
Anybody can go in and do it, right?
Anybody can edit it. I've gotten quite good at editing Wikipedia. So there we go. Mihalis Mike Lazaridis, the founder and co-CEO of Research in Motion.
Very interesting. I hope you were paying attention because we're about to ask you a question about what we just spoke of here on Tech Talk, and you could win a good prize. So stand by. This is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Schertz. It's this guy right here.
And I would be that aforementioned guy right here. My name is Jim Russ. I am the adjunct professor for messing things up and lowering the academic bar here at Tech Talk Radio. We just finished talking about Mike Lazaridis, the founder and co-CEO of Research in Motion. They make the BlackBerry. If you can tell me what the original suggested name for the BlackBerry was, you will win today's pop quiz. And the prize, of course, tickets for two, fine dining at the Escoffier Stratford University on the campus in Falls Church, or Cafe Karim at the campus in Woodbridge. To get that answer to us, you need to do it quickly and by dialing the following numbers. If you're calling from west of Istanbul, Turkey, it is 877-936-9333. If you're calling from north of Windsor, Ontario, Canada, it is 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line is 877-936-9333. Andrew Mitchell, the adjunct professor for prize distribution and crowd control, is manning the phones, and you're listening to the Pop Quiz on Tech Talk Radio.
Building code to break poverty in Bangladesh. Teaching people in the third world how to code seems a growing trend that may help break the cycle of worldwide poverty. The Danish-based microfinancing operation Coders Trust is starting to do that with a group of 100 young coders in Bangladesh. They saw a big opportunity with coders in the third world and created their microfinance organization to give those below the poverty line a chance at a better education starting in Bangladesh. Coders Trust starts by identifying young people who seem to have a good work ethic. And then they approach them to see whether they would like to go into this program to really learn code seriously. And they offer them a microloan of $2,000. Now, here's where the microloan comes in. You see, these guys are just living hand to mouth. And they've got to go out and they've got to struggle to get money just to survive. And they would like them to be able to concentrate their energy on learning code and not worry about where they're going to get lunch from or dinner. And so what they do is they give them small amounts of money as they're going through the code lessons. So the loan comes in increments, which are tied to their progress. For example, they get paid a certain amount of money each time they pass certain tests, either in their program or in the Code Academy. Now, when the coders start working in a job after they learn how to code, they pay back their loan, you know, once they get a job. And this $2,000 of this small incremental payment as they're learning to code keeps them going until they learn code well enough to get a job. Now, the organization is backed by Nobel Peace Prize winner Dr. Muhammad Yunus Grameen Bank, which, you know, pioneered in the use of microfinance. And they're funding this in Bangladesh. And, of course, Yunus has been doing a lot of stuff in Bangladesh. So it takes time for these guys to learn it. He wants to bring them and reach them up to a survival level so they can learn how to program. 1 in 4 people in Bangladesh currently makes less than $2 a day. Mm. And that's more than 39 million people living below the poverty line on a daily basis. That's 39 million people are earning less than $2 a day. All they need to break out of this circumstance is a laptop, the ability to understand English, and know how to code. They're running a software development startup at the same time that they came up with Coders Trust because they couldn't find anybody who could actually code. Now, he previously, this founder of this organization, previously served as an officer during Iraq, supplying internet and education to the people there. And he understood how much of a need there was for education in the third world. Now, this is just a test program for now, but eventually they hope to put 100,000 people on this platform and expand it to Middle East countries in a number of years. This actually is a real trend. I mean, there's one of the companies in my CEO group, my 10X CEO group, NewsCred, and they actually do content marketing for social media. All of their programmers are in Bangladesh, and part of the mission of NewsCred is to give programmers in Bangladesh a chance to earn a reasonable living. So instead of going working for $2 a day, they actually can earn $10 an hour, which in Bangladesh is big money.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. It's Saturday morning, and we're on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2 standby. More Tech Talk coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge talking technology. Google's Loony Net Balloons are getting better, and Google's very proud of it. When Google announced Project Loon, Project Loon, June 15th of last year, a lot of people were skeptical. But the reports since then demonstrate that they've been able to extend the balloon flight times and add mobile connectivity to the service. As a result, Google expectations are flying even higher, and they think this is going to become a real deal. The balloons are delivering 10 times more bandwidth, 10 times more steerability, and are staying up 10 times as long. The balloons typically remain aloft for a few days at most, and download speeds from the balloon, internet connection speeds through the balloons, might be 1 or 2 megabits per second. That was comparable to the slowest wired internet service. This was a year ago, the results. They stayed up about a few days and could deliver 1 or 2 megabits. Now, since the first test flights in New Zealand, Google balloons have clocked over 1.5 million kilometers. Increasing the craft's endurance has been a key challenge. Google bumped up flight duration by analyzing failures. Using former military operations people, they took great pains to discover nearly every downed balloon. Ultimately, the Loon engineers discovered that one of the biggest factors in the failure were small, almost undetectable leaks in the polymer skins that must withstand huge atmospheric pressure and up to 100-mile-an-hour winds. Even a pinhole can shorten the balloon's lifetime to a few days. The Loon crew not only strengthened the fragile seams where the leaks often occurred, but took fanatic care in handling the envelopes. They used to walk on the envelopes on a flattened polymer in stocking feet. Google improved the Loon flight times by dramatically upgrading the altitude control system, increasing the vertical range of the balloon so they can catch more favorable winds. As a result, it's not unusual for Google balloons to stay flying for 75 days. One craft has been up, aloft over 100 days and is still flying. An earlier balloon circled the globe 3 times before descending. It completed 1 circumnavigation in 22 days. Google made a huge advance when they added LTE spectrum. This is a fourth generation telecom spectrum, making it possible for people to connect directly to the internet with their mobile phones. Using LTE also helped Google boost the capacity of its connections. Recent Loon payloads are providing as much as 22 megabits per second to ground antennas and 5 megabits per second to a handset. Because LTE makes it possible for Google to interweave its service with existing mobile networks, telcos want to partner with Google. So they actually may make money out of this deal. The goal for next year is to have 100 flights, 100-day flights with 100 balloons in the air at all times. Ultimately, they would like to have a full ring of between 300 and 400 balloons circling the globe to offer continuous service to targeted areas. So the goal would be, say, to remote Africa, to provide high-speed internet access.
When this thing comes down, can they find it and can they recycle it, do you know?
They do find it, and then they recycle the electronics. And so that's what they're doing. And actually, if they can actually control it, they're able to land them and bring them back to where they want. Because you can, by doing the altitude, they can kind of control where they're.
That way, they're not crashing into something important.
Where they're headed. That's right. So that is one of the Google X projects, and now Google believes that this is going to be the real deal. Google wants more girls in computer science. Now, Google has announced it's going to provide up to $50 million to organizations that can encourage more girls to take an interest in computer science. Part of its Made with Code initiative, the cash will be used for things like rewarding teachers who support girls who take computer science courses at the Code Academy or at the Khan Academy. Other aspects of the Made with Code scheme, which is also backed by other organizations like Girls Inc., Girl Scouts of America, MIT Media Labs, National Center for Women and Information, Women in Technology, among others. It also includes the Blockly-based projects, while like making 3D printed bracelets or learning to create GIFs, or making building beats for a music track. Google has put together a standalone site for this initiative. It's called Things You Love Are Made with Code. And I'll put the link to that right here on the website. You can click onto that or you can just Google it. Things You Love Are Made with Code. And they're trying to show girls that the things that they love are made with code to make them interested in writing more code.
Excellent.
how Nest is using your data. This is actually an interesting kind of deal. You know, Nest is the company that first of all made the thermostats. Mm-hmm. You remember that?
Right. Yeah, we talked about them. They were the $200 like a smart thermostat thing.
Yeah, they make a smart thermostat. It's Wi-Fi connected, and then they also made CO2 sensors that you put in your house. Mm-hmm. They're all connected with Wi-Fi connections, and then they link back to Nest's main data site. And they do, like the thermostat, reduces your utility cost because it dynamically adjusts itself based on your behavior. You don't have to go in and adjust it. It just observes when you're up, when you're down, when you're not home, and it makes all those adjustments for you automatically. But Nest is gathering data. Now, Nest reports, for instance, that carbon monoxide, which you'd think is relatively rare, but now they've got data. And based on the data that they've collected, Nest revealed that CO2 events where the CO2 levels are dangerously high are not all that rare. 0.65% of the users experienced a carbon monoxide event during the 5 months that Nest analyzed it. And that's a lot of people, actually.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So each Nest Protect, that's their CO2 sensor, Protect, is packed full of sensors, some of which are capable much more than doing right now. They've got heat sensors, light sensors, motion sensors, ultrasonic wave sensors. These little devices can gather a huge amount of information about you and your life. They can tell when you get home, when you go to bed, what is your daily routine, when you cook dinner. And Google will be able to deliver ads more targeted to you. Like, they know when you cook dinner, so they're going to give you food ads. They know so they get, it has the potential of them knowing everything about you, even when you're not online.
Sure.
Because, well, your devices are always online.
Exactly.
So Tony Fadell, who's the CEO, said that the company's privacy policies won't be affected by its acquisition of Google, at least for the current time.
Uh-huh.
But this device, this thermostat and the Protect CO2 sensor are really a Trojan horse. It's a way to get Wi-Fi connections and Wi-Fi data into the house, and they've already got it in 400,000 homes. Now, neither Nest nor Google has stated any intention to turn Nest hardware into more than it is right now, but it's easy to see how Google would like to have hundreds of thousands of Wi-Fi connected devices in the homes of all the Google users.
Sure.
Now, it's worth pointing out that Nest and Google haven't just built a duo of products that make your home smarter. They built a nationwide network of sleeping sensors that will make them smarter about you.
Amazing.
That's right.
It's very Orwellian, isn't it?
That's right. It is.
This is Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. More Tech Talk coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
The Space Elevator Conference.
Oh, I just love this.
Oh, yeah. I always like to track the results of the Space Elevator. Now, this is an elevator that goes all the way to space. Now, you might say, How can that be?
How can that be, Doc?
What's holding it up?
What is holding it up?
Okay, let's suppose, we'll have an experiment. Suppose you would take a rope, and you tie a weight at the end of the rope, and then you start spinning around, and the rope is going out horizontally as you spin around, and it's being held out horizontally because of the centrifugal force exerted by that rock as you spin around. That's the principle of the space elevator, except in this case, the rope is attached to the equator, and it's a very, very long string that goes way out into space, and there's a weight at the end, and as the Earth spins around, that weight, which would be a satellite or some kind of object out there, would pull the ribbon very tight, and then you could then have an elevator that could go right up the ribbon. How does this sound, Jim?
This sounds like there's a whole lot that could go wrong.
There's a lot that could go wrong. First of all, you don't want an airplane to run into your ribbon.
That could be a problem.
That would be a problem. Here's the issue. They can't use just regular materials because they weigh too much, and the weight of the materials would be so heavy and produce so much strain that they would break. And so they actually don't have a physical material that's suitable for the ribbon.
Would really just use ribbon, right? Well, that wouldn't be strong enough.
No, ribbon would not be strong
enough.
Scotch tape? And so they have theoretically shown that carbon nanotubes are strong enough.
Ah.
So this is a very dense structure of carbon nanotubes where we have a single atoms of carbon form a small tube, and it's very light because it's hollow on the inside but extremely strong because it's such a densely packed collection of carbon atoms. And carbon nanotubes have the low density and the tensile strength to be successful. The problem is they can't make carbon nanotubes thousands of miles long.
No, I guess not.
They can make carbon nanotubes in the lab that are just very tiny.
And, of course, this might cost more than $5.
It's possible it could cost more than $5. So what's the purpose of the conference?
They
want to get all the technical people together to talk about the issues and what the barriers are. We all know what the barrier is. We don't have the carbon nanotubes yet. They also would like to have seminars to raise public awareness about the space elevator. And the reason they want public awareness raised is that they need money. And if the public doesn't say, "Hey, let's just spend $100 million on the space elevator," they're afraid that may not be spent. And then finally, they're hoping that somebody's going to show up with a carbon nanotube breakthrough.
Guess what?
It's not. I haven't heard it.
No, and I'm not going to ride it when they build it.
It'll be a while, and it goes up very slowly.
That kind of time.
When you go up, it might take several days to get up into outer space because you're going up very slowly. Well, and of course, how do you power the thing? And they frequently they're thinking of shining a laser on it and using the electrical power generated by the laser to actually propel it up the carbon ribbon.
Here's the thing. I don't think I want to be on any kind of elevator that's moving way too fast.
Yeah, and there are also issues that as it goes through the radiation belts, it might create a problem. Now, what they're thinking is that they're projecting that looking at the rate of technology development that carbon nanotubes may be mature enough around 2041.
Okay, good.
So we got to wait a few years, but in 2041, Jim, you may be able to just take the ride of your life.
I doubt it.
Now, the reason they want to do it is that then space launching a satellite will be one-tenth the cost because they just send it up by elevator, mm-hmm. and they don't need a rocket.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. All you want to know about space elevators.
How about when it goes through the Earth's atmosphere? Would it then burn you to a crisp?
No, because it comes down very slowly. It's up very low, down very. There's not the normal reentry stuff. I can't believe the hour's almost up.
It just flies by.
It has just gone faster and faster and faster. I'm telling you, we love all of your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. And we also love it when you check out all the programs at the Stratford University website. Just go to stratford.edu, check out the programs, and when you talk to them, let them know that you heard about those programs on Tech Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week here on Tech Talk.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and federalnewsradio.com. Press